Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing our reading from the ninth canto. Significant. Prophet said, if you read all nine cantos, 1 through 9, everything, by the time you get to the 10th canto, you should be self-realized. So, if you're not yet self-realized, get ready. So, this is the 5th chapter, Durvasa Muni's Life Spared. Now, yesterday, Goda neglected to read the chapter summary, so it's our standard here. We always read the chapter summary before we dive into the chapter. So I'm just going to backtrack and do that before we do the verse today, which will be text 7. In this chapter, we find Maharaj Ambarisha offering prayers to the Sudarshana Chakra. And we find how this Sudarshana Chakra became merciful to Durvasa Muni. By the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, Durvasa Muni immediately went to Maharaj Ambarisha and fell at his lotus feet. Maharaj Ambarisha, being naturally very humble and meek, felt shy and ashamed because Durvasa Muni had fallen at his feet. And thus he began to offer prayers to the Sudarshana Chakra. Let's jump ahead. Just to save Durvasa. What is this Sudarshana Chakra? The Sudarshana Chakra is the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by which he creates the entire material world. Sa'aikshata sa'asrijata. This is the Vedic version. The Sudarshana Chakra, which is the origin of creation and is most dear to the Lord, has thousands of spokes. This Sudarshana Chakra is the killer of the prowess of all other weapons, the killer of darkness, and the manifester of the prowess of devotional service. It is the means of establishing religious principles, and it is the killer of all irreligious activities. Without his mercy, the universe cannot be maintained, and therefore the Sudarshana Chakra is employed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Maharaj Ambarisha thus prayed that the Sudarshana Chakra be merciful, the Sudarshana Chakra, being appeased, refrained from killing Durvasa Muni, who thus achieved the Sudarshana Chakra's mercy. Durvasa Muni thus learned to give up the nasty idea of considering a Vaishnava an ordinary person. Vaishnava Jati Buddhi. Maharaj Ambarisha belonged to the Kshatriya group, and therefore Durvasa Muni considered him lower than the Brahmanas and wanted to exercise brahminical power against him. By this incident, everyone should learn how to stop mischievous ideas of neglecting Vaishnavas. After this incident, Maharaj Ambarisha gave Durvasa Muni sumptuous food to eat. And then the king, who had been standing in the same place for 1 year without eating anything, also took prasad. Unbelievable. Maharaj Ambarisha later divided his property among his sons and went to the bank of the Manasa Sarovara to execute devotional meditation. So that gives us an overview of this chapter. Now we'll go to the verse for today, which is text 7. Tvatejasa dharma mayena sanghritam tamak prakashas chajusho mahatmanam turatyaste mahimagiram pate tvadrupame tat sarasat paravaram. Tvatejasa dharma mayena sanghritam tamak prakashas chajusho mahatmanam tur Rachayaste Mahimagirang Pate. Tvadrupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. Tvatejasa Dharma Mayena Sanghritam. Tamak Prakashas Chadrasho Mahatmana. Turachayaste Mahimagirang Pate. Tvadrupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. Please chant. Tat Tejasa Dharma Mayena Sangritam. Tamak Prakashas Chadrisho Mahatmanam. Turachayaste Mahimagirang Pate. Tadrupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. Tvatejasa Dharma Mayena Sangritam. Tamak Prakashas Chadrisho Mahatmanam. Durachayaste Mahimagiram Pate. Tvadrupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. Prakashas Chadrisho Mahatmanam. Durachayaste Mahimagiram Pate. Tvadrupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. Vaishnavis. Tvatejasa Dharma Mayena Sangritam. Tamak Prakashas Chadrisho Mahatmanam. Durachayaste Mahimagiram Pate. Tadrupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. Tat Tejasa Dharma Mayena Sangritam. Tamak Prakashas Chadrisho Mahatmanam. Durachayaste Mahimagiram Pate. Tvadrupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. Tvatejasa Dharma Mayena Sangritam. Tamak Prakashas Chadrisho Mahatmanam. Durachayaste Mahimagiram Pate. Rupame Tat Sarasat Paravaram. So, we'll do the synonyms now. Tatejasa, by your effulgence. Dharma Mayena, which is full of religious principles. Sanghritam, dissipated. Tamaha, darkness. Prakashaha, cha, illumination also. Drishaha, of all directions. Mahatmanam, of great learned personalities. Durachayaha, insurmountable. Te, your. Mahima, glories. Kirampate, O master of speech. Tvatrupam, your manifestation. Etat, this. Sat asat, manifested and unmanifested. Para avaram, superior and inferior. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. O master of speech, by your effulgence, full of religious principles, the darkness of the world is dissipated. and the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifested. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence, for all things manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. Please repeat. O Master of Speech, by your effulgence, full of religious principles, the darkness of the world is dissipated, and the knowledge of learned persons or great souls is manifest. Indeed, no one can surpass your effulgence. For all things manifested and unmanifested, gross and subtle, superior and inferior, are but various forms of you that are manifested by your effulgence. So Srila Prabhupada's purport. Without illumination, nothing can be seen, especially in this material world. The illumination in this world emanates from the effulgence of Sudarshana, the original vision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The illuminating principles of the sun, the moon, and fire emanate from Sudarshana. Similarly, illumination by knowledge also comes from Sudarshana, because with the illumination of Sudarshana, one can distinguish one thing from another, the superior from the inferior. Generally, people accept a powerful yogi like Durvasa Muni as wonderfully superior. But if such a person is chased by the Sudarshana Chakra, we can see his real identity and understand how inferior he is because of his dealings with devotees. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pascha Tadeshtarine Om Agyana Tamarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtang Shtapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakaramayam Dandati Swapadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvatam Cha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kopaturubhyascha Kripasindubhya Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gorbhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So this is a real mind-blowing pastime in terms mostly of Ambarish Maharaj's behavior. Amazing. Fasting for a whole year. This guest comes up, uninvited by the way. It's not that he invited Durvasa Muni to come at a certain time and then he came and said, man, it's going to interfere with breaking my fast. No, he didn't invite him. He showed up uninvited. So we know in the proper Vedic culture there's this concept of Atithi Narayan. Titi means when something is done at the right time. The right time to do something is called Titi. Atithi means not the right time, wrong time. So Atithi Narayan means if someone shows up at your door uninvited, wrong time of day, still one has to be courteous, cordial. This is proper etiquette, proper Vaishnava behavior especially. This should apply to everyone, but especially in the Vaishnava community, we should observe this. Do we? Each of us can answer for ourselves, but the typical training we have in the Western countries, and we're in Kali Yuga now everywhere, even in India, is have a dog to alert you that somebody's coming. Have a gun, so somewhere or other, if they get by the dog, you can chase them away with your gun. And if anyone dares to knock on your door and invite uninvited, what do you say first of all? What are you doing here? What do you want? Get out of here. This is our training in the West. Prabhupada noted that once he was on a morning walk. I don't know which city, but it was somewhere in America. Can't recall which city. And he said to the devotees, this is the difference between India and America. He said, in India, as a sannyasi, I can go to anybody's door and they will invite me in. But in America, there's a dog, I can't even get past the gate. You know? This is American culture. You have a dog to keep everybody away. So Ambarish Maharaj, but to finish that, because it's very important, we've heard it so many times, and you know, we have to let it sink in. Atithya Narayana principle is extremely important. So if someone comes to your door uninvited, three things you're supposed to do. Yes. First of all, you have to invite them in. You can't, you know, don't leave them hanging at the door. Invite them in. Give them a seat, some place to sit. Sweet words and some refreshment, at least a glass of water. And then you inquire why they came. This is proper etiquette. Not first of all ask, why did you come here? And then depending on whether I'm into whatever it is, then I let you in. No. First of all, you let them in, sit them down, give them some refreshment, and then with sweet words you inquire, my dear friend, Prabhu, what can I do for you? Like that. Again, whether we're practicing or not, individually we have to answer that, but I know in my own case it's not always the case. I think I'm very busy doing something and then somebody knocks on the door and it's, my initial reaction is, what do they want? Don't they know I'm busy? So we need to cleanse that, the mind of that. Because, as we know, Krishna is extremely playful. After all, he's God. He has no competitor, nothing to worry about. So he can always be in a playful mood. Even when he's killing the demons, he's in a playful mood. And he's very tricky. Right here in this temple room, we have that painting upstairs of the pastime with Radharani was nominally, supposedly married to Abhimanyu, right? And but we know Krishna is her heart and soul. So Krishna was at her place, hanging out, and her mother comes. What to do? So he transforms himself into Abhimanyu. And the mother comes, and she thinks everything is normal. But then the real Abhimanyu comes, and Krishna is now playing the part of Abhimanyu, says, it's Krishna, he's pretending to be me. And then she comes and she chases her own son away. So Krishna is very playful. So there's nothing to prevent Dwarkadish or Rukmini to come and knock on your door pretending to be somebody else, just to see if you've imbibed this Atithya Narayana principle. Maybe it has happened, who knows? Krishna is not tied to this altar. Don't think that Krishna is stuck here. I'm absolutely sure that he regularly patrols this community, watching all of us to see how we're advancing spiritually. And that's one way of finding out how spiritually advanced somebody is. You know, all the big words we can speak and throw so many shlokas and this and that. But when somebody knocks on your door, how do you respond? That shows where you are spiritually. So Maharaj Ambarish is showing an extreme example of this. Atithya Narayana, Durvasa Muni comes to his door, palace. He's just about to break his fast. He obviously greets him nicely and treats him nicely, offers him prasadam, and he decides to go away and take bath. He takes a sip of water. He comes, Durvasa Muni comes back and, you know the story, tries to harass him, if not kill him with this demon. Sudarshan comes to his rescue, chases Durvasa all over the universe. Meanwhile, what is Ambarish Maharaj doing? He's not saying, that rascal, I'm glad he's getting burned. Kill him, cut his head off. Cursing me like this, unnecessary. No. He's standing there for a whole year, simply taking a sip of water now and then, waiting for his uninvited guest to come back. Hare Krishna. Anybody here think they could do that? You know, if prasadam is a few minutes late, we get upset. What to speak of waiting a whole year to eat just because some uninvited guest, you know, is getting what he deserved? Extreme Vaishnava behavior here. And not only that, it's not like he was in the Brahminical class. He was a Kshatriya. And we expect a Kshatriya with a kingdom to run. And, you know, the Kshatriyas usually have a little more fire. You think of the Pandavas. They were great devotees, but they had some fire there. Especially Bhimasena. Oh my God. When they had that gambling match and he was sitting there, he wanted to rip Duryodhana apart right then and there. He wanted to disembowel. He wanted to just smash the heck out of him. And that's Kshatriya, and that's what you expect from Kshatriya. So he had some fire. He was ready to, you know. But because Yudhishthira is the elder brother, held him back, and he just was smoldering, waiting for his opportunity to do that. So somebody may also misunderstand that, thinking, my God, you know, isn't he a devotee? Aren't devotees supposed to be gentle and forgiving like Maharaj Ambarish? It just goes to show you, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra, you cannot understand the dealings of devotees. A pure devotee means that at every moment, he or she is doing exactly what Krishna wants them to do. So you can't judge that. It's not that every devotee should act in the same way. I've marked this person that I think is a pure devotee. Therefore, anybody who doesn't act like that, I don't think to be is a pure devotee. That's a foolish approach, and it will get you in deep trouble. That means you would run into Bhimasena and offend him. And he's also a pure devotee. And you know, you offend a pure devotee. It's mad elephant offense. So we can't, based on our understanding of what we think a pure devotee should be, judge everybody else like that. It's very, very dangerous occupation. That doesn't mean that one cannot judge. This is another foolish thing in the West. Don't be judgmental. Don't judge. You can't help but judge. What you need to be is train how to properly judge a situation, just like Ambarish Maharaj did. Situation arose to break the fast or not to break the fast. Because his intelligence is completely sharp, he did the right thing. Take a little water, which is breaking and not breaking. So as long as you're alive, your intelligence is going to be working, and you're going to be judging in every situation. That's just natural. What we need to be is train how to judge properly. Not that you stop judging. You cannot stop judging, no matter how hard you try. It's like trying to stop thinking. It can't happen. As long as you're alive, your thoughts are going to be going. So you have to be trained how to properly think. Proper discrimination. Proper discrimination. That is part of being a disciple. A disciple submits him or herself to the guru to be trained how to properly discriminate. What to do, what not to do. When to do, when not to do. This is part of the training. But again, in Kali Yuga, everybody wants to be their own thinker. I don't want to be told what to do and how to think. And, you know, just give me the basics and I'll figure it out and, you know, come to my own conclusion. And then when they do that and things don't turn out right, then they, instead of blaming themselves, they turn around for somebody to blame. But why didn't you tell me that other portion? Or why didn't you stop this guy? Or God is to blame. If he's actually all-powerful and all-knowing, why didn't he stop those people from blowing up that plane or blowing up that building or killing that person? Or again, not seeing the big picture. So as devotees coming in this line, we're meant to have the big picture. We're meant to have the big picture. Starting with, there is a supreme controller and it's not me. That's the beginning of knowledge. If you're still confused as to whether you are that controller or not, then you're not going to get very far. So that's the very first thing you have to establish. There is a God, there is a supreme controller, and it's not me. All right, now then we can go on to the next step. So it's not me. What is my relationship with that supreme controller? And the guru can start to explain. The Shastra start explain what is Krishna's position, what is our position, and how the two relate. So the relationship between the individual part and parcel, soul, who's also eternal, we're also eternals, nityo nityanam, we're all eternal, but amongst all the eternals, there's one chief eternal. And that chief eternal does not have to go through the cycle of birth and death that we do. When he appears in this world, Ajopi Sanavayatma Bhutanami Shropi. He comes by his own sweet will. We are in the conditioned state in our material sojourn, forced to take birth, forced to die. A few classes ago, not the last class he gave, but the class before that, Vijay cited this nice verse from the 11th canto, the Pingala pastimes. And it stuck with me. Many times devotees ask about my, you know, knowing a few verses. I'm always inspired to learn verses by hearing other devotees, beginning with Srila Prabhupada. Whatever verse Prabhupada quotes in a lecture, I want to learn that verse. If I'm reading a purport and Prabhupada quotes a verse, I want to learn that verse. And when I'm listening to other devotees speak and they quote a verse that I don't know, I want to learn that verse. So Vijay quoted this nice verse and I immediately wanted to learn it. It says, Sangsare Kupe Patitam. That's the first line. Sangsara, we know, means a cycle of birth and death. Kupa means well. Kupe means within the well. Not just any well, a dark well. Patitam means fallen, just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is known as Patita Pavana, the savior of the fallen. Vishayar, Mushita Ikshana. Mushita Ikshana. So Vishayar means by sense gratification, we're in this dark well, and we're engaged in sense gratification, which steals away our vision. Mushita Ikshanam. Ikshana means the vision. Mushita means takeaway. Grastam Kalayanatmanam. Very nice line. Grastam. Just like in English we have this word grasp. So grastam means you're grabbed. Kala Ahina Atmanam. Kala is time. Ahina means serpent, snake. Atmanam, all the living entities. So all the living entities that are in this deep, dark well of experiencing samsara, they're being held by the snake of time. Konyas taratam adhishvara, the last line. So what is the hope? How can we get out of this? Kaha. Who? Anya. But, other than taratam, to deliver adhishvara. Again, all of us have some little control in our sphere of influence. Somebody's controlling a yoga studio. Somebody's controlling New Dwarka community. Everybody has some area of influence. But there's an Adi Ishvara. That's Krishna. He's the Adi Ishvara. Adi Ishvara. Two words. Adi Ishvara put together becomes Adi Ishvara. He's controlling everything and everyone. So if you surrender to him, then he can get you out of this dark well where we simply are convinced to chase after sense gratification, even though lifetime after lifetime, we die miserably after, again, chasing sense gratification a whole life. And no profit at the end. There's no profit to show for it. So devotees are not meant to die like that. And today we're going to be memorializing yes, Brahmananda Prabhu. It's a little telling. I mean, many of us, most of us here, never had any direct experience with him. Myself, very little. But I was speaking, I said that, in my opinion, because of his being so dear to Srila Prabhupada, there's no way Prabhupada would let him slip away at the end. Prabhupada would be there for him at his passing. That's my conclusion. And somebody contacted me and said, well, you know, I don't necessarily agree. Why is he considered special? All of Prabhupada's disciples are special. And yes, that is a fact. That is a fact. Just like all the living entities are dear to Krishna. They're all his parts and parcels. Even Durvasa Muni, anybody. We're all living entities. But there are those who are within Krishna's heart because they're completely pure and they don't know anybody but him. So when you're voluntarily in a state of consciousness where you're up to even inimical to God and want to kill God, like Kamsa, then the relationship is a little different. There's no question. It's not exactly the same. It's a little different. So similarly, just because someone is special and dear to Prabhupada doesn't mean that others are not. See, this is a material concept. If I say, Jared is my best bud, then immediately everybody thinks, well, and there's no room for me. No, that's not a fact. On the spiritual platform, everybody has wonderful relationships. But still, there are special relationships. You know, we can't understand on the material plane. Just like Prabhupada would say many times, just because I say something is important doesn't mean that other things are not important. They're all important. But I'm specifically pointing this out at this point in time to you, whether it's book distribution or keeping something clean or whatever. Prabhupada would stress on certain things at certain times, and we would think, oh, drop everything else. And no, everything is all important. But he's stressing this particular thing at this particular time. So similarly, all of Prabhupada's disciples and all of humanity, this is the hallmark of pure devotees. Everybody's dear to them because they're seeing everybody as part and parcel of Krishna. But still they have special relationships. So Brahmananda Prabhu had a very special relationship with Prabhupada. Nobody can take that away. no matter what happened after Prabhupada left or whatever, he had an extremely special relationship with Srila Prabhupada. And in my opinion, again, and, you know, his passing, the way he passed, I think bears this out, that they wanted to take him to Delhi because, you know, he's experiencing some medical situation, emergency. But he refused to go. I congratulate him for that. And I beg you all, if I'm in Vrindavan at my last moments and somebody not so bright suggests taking me to some hospital outside of Vrindavan, don't let them do it. You're in Vrindavan. Why go anywhere else? That's the place to pass away. Passing away in Vrindavan is very, very special. That's not to say that those who pass away outside of Vrindavan don't achieve the same goal. That's not a fact, necessarily. But if you are in Vrindavan, there are only two possibilities as indicated by Prabhupada himself. Either you're going to go back to Godhead directly, or you're going to take one more birth in Vrindavan and then go back to Godhead. One of those two possibilities, from what I understand from Prabhupada, hearing Prabhupada speak. Anybody who passes away in Vrindavan is going straight back to Godhead, or they're going to take one more birth in Vrindavan and then go back to Godhead. Even if it's an animal birth. Like you said one time, that there are people who live here in Vrindavan and they're acting like monkeys, you know, specifically in regards to sex life. You're living in the holy dham, and instead of concentrating on Krishna, you're concentrating on sex life. So the punishment is, you could take a birth as an animal, and then you go back to Godhead. Some people in the Vrindavan, when they heard that, they were upset. But that was Prabhupada's verdict. You know, you're doing nonsense in the dham, so your punishment is you take birth in the dham as an animal, and then after that birth, you go back to Godhead. So, based on Brahmananda Prabhu's passing, it's my conviction that Prabhupada was there for him, and Prabhupada will be there for anybody. Because Prabhupada was very, very grateful. Unlike, you know, when you're in a conditioned state, no matter how much somebody does for you, you may thank them for a few minutes, a few days, and then after that, okay, what have you done for me lately? You know, like that. That's the material mentality. But the spiritual mentality is any little thing that somebody did to help Prabhupada carry on his movement, he was very, very pleased and grateful. So what to speak of somebody like Brahmananda, who whatever Prabhupada asked him to do, he did it. He wanted to drop his work and just be a full-time devotee. Prabhupada said, no, right now I need you to go on working and give me the money. So he did that. And then when it was time to quit, he quit. And then when Prabhupada asked him to do some things that he'd never done in his life, you know, start printing the Bhakti Godhead magazine, he had no experience with that. But still, some or other, he and the other devotees, they pulled it off. Whatever Prabhupada asked them to do, practically, they didn't. Don't you think that Prabhupada is extremely pleased with a person like that, no matter what happened subsequently? So I was a little upset at this person for not getting that point, for actually trying to correct me, for seeing Brahmananda Prabhu as being very special to Prabhupada. Hello, I mean, come on. I mean, this is actually mean-spirited. And devotees are not meant to be mean-spirited. And Ambarish Maharaj is showing here how not mean-spirited a devotee is. I mean, I can only speak for myself. You can, you know. But if I was in his situation, this so-called mystic yogi attacks me for no reason. And then the Sudarshan Chakras chase me. I'm happy. I'm happy. Go on, you know, fend for yourself. Hey, I'm going to break my fast. I'm going to eat and enjoy. But no. No, he stands in the same spot for a whole year, waiting for this uninvited guest to come back. He takes only a little water, waiting for this uninvited guest to come back. What extreme, tolerance and extreme Vaishnava. And then, after he comes back with the Sudarshan Chakra chasing him, he prays to the Sudarshan Chakra to please, you know, stop and give this guy a break. I don't know if I could do that, so... Very, very special. This Ambarish Maharaj, extremely special person. And we can't imitate his behavior, but we can appreciate his behavior and try our best to incorporate in our lives this mood of tolerance, of forgiveness, of surrender. He had this quality. He had these qualities because he's a surrendered soul, completely surrendered to Krishna. And therefore, he was not disturbed. The pure devotees are not in this realm of existence. They're on the spiritual realm of existence. So things that would seem intolerable to someone who was in material consciousness is completely tolerable by the devotees, the pure devotees, because they're not affected. It's not that he was gritting his teeth and... No, a pure devotee is beyond the three modes of material nature. So the things that are happening that we would freak out about doesn't freak them out. Just like Prahlad, so many ways Hiranyakashipu tried to kill him. He was not disturbed. It's not that Prahlad was... He was not disturbed because he's not on this level of existence. He's on a different plane of existence. So he was really not disturbed, which is what freaked Hiranyakashipu out. I'm trying to kill this 5-year-old boy and he's not even disturbed by me. Imagine, you know, you pull a gun. I told this story before and I'll end here. One devotee was on book distribution. And from our estimation, we didn't think of this devotee as being a pure devotee. He was a nice ISKCON devotee and it was at a book fair somewhere and was trying to distribute books. I mean, it was at a fair, one of these county fairs, and the devotees had a table. They were trying to distribute books and prasadam. So this Christian guy came up and tried to heckle him and get him, you know, tried to get him disturbed. And the devotee was nice and just... So finally this guy became so disturbed, he pulled a gun on the devotee. And the devotee just kind of ignored him and just kept preaching to other people. And the guy was so blown away by that, he just kind of slinked away and left. He pulled a gun on this devotee, and the devotee didn't even react. He just kept preaching. And so this is how devotees are in the perfect stage of devotional service. One is not disturbed by anything that's going on this material plane of existence. Even imminent death, one is not afraid of, and one is not disturbed by it. And it's not a show. It's not that they're like, the pure devotees are, they're just literally not disturbed by it. When you're in a conditioned state, any little thing disturbs you, a little insect bite or anything. When you're in the perfect state, nothing disturbs you on this plane of existence. All right, we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Bhrigupati Prabhu. It's in the drawer. I saw it. All right. What's the question? I can repeat it. What do I have to say? Like I have something to do with that process? But we should never think of anything as hard and fast. You know, Krishna can and does do whatever he wants to do. So that may be the general rule, but Krishna can break the general rule. Anything else? Yes, Karuna Dharani Mataji. Yes. But again, because it's on the spiritual realm, it's not that because they had a very special relationship with Prabhupada, that means he can't have a special relationship with others. You know, we have this material conception because we know we're limited. So if I have a very special relationship with this person, it kind of diminishes my relationship with others. But on the spiritual platform, that's not how it works. I'm just saying, just as Krishna can have unlimited, you know, relationships with unlimited parts and parcels, the pure devotees, when they come in this world, they can manifest that same sweetness with unlimited, they can reciprocate. In other words, they're not limited because they're not in it for their self-aggrandizement. So it's not that Prabhupada had a special relationship with those early devotees because they did so much for him personally or something like that. No. His vision is all Krishna's parts and parcels are important, and I will do my utmost to wake them up, jeev jago, go back to home, back to God, and stop rotting in this material world. So it's a special, but yes, at the same time, we cannot diminish that this flavor of relationship that that those early devotees had with Srila Prabhupada. And especially Brahmananda, he was willing to do anything for Srila Prabhupada. Anything. And Prabhupada pointed that out on several occasions. You know, he said, because Brahmananda was a pretty, you know, big guy, and he was a wrestler in school. He was pretty strong. So Prabhupada, he said, you see him? If I tell him to kill you, he'll kill you. When somebody was bothering him one time. And he probably would have done it. It wasn't just Prabhupada saying that. He was so surrendered to Prabhupada. If Prabhupada had told him to kill somebody, he would have done it. You know, but so the special relationship, that very, very sweet special relationship that he had with Srila Prabhupada. And that, again, does not diminish Prabhupada's relationship with others, with us, with anyone. The pure devotees are not limited like we are. You know, we think that if we have two or three close friends, then that's it. I don't have time for anybody else. But on the spiritual plane, it's not like that. Krishna expands himself unlimitedly to have special relationships with all the devotees. And the devotees themselves have sweet relationships with as many people as, you know, and they're not limited. Just because I have a very special relationship with Brahmananda means I can't have a special relationship with Rabindranath or Jadarani or somebody else. No, that's not the situation. The pure devotees are not limited in that way. They can have a special relationship with unlimited followers and disciples. We limit ourselves by how we approach them. Okay, Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.